Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, I am delighted to welcome the winners of last year's San Diego Music Awards for Best Blues Band, the Bayou Brothers, with a sound straight out of Louisiana's dance clubs, blues festivals, and backyard crawfish boils. The Bayou Brothers are known for their rollicking, foot-stomping, musical gumbo style. Features a blend of, as you can hear, accordions, keyboards, guitar, bass, drums, and rub board, all with three-part harmonies. The band performs Zydeco, R&B, and blues music in the tradition of New Orleans Mardi Gras festivities. They played for some of San Diego's biggest music festivals, including Gator by the Bay and the San Diego Blues Festival. And next, they'll be performing at our very own East County Magazine Mardi Gras party on Wednesday, March 12th at Pinnacle Peak in Santee. Now, Rick Lee founded the Bayou Brothers back in 1996. So, Rick and everyone, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rick, can you start out by introducing yourself? Tell us what you play, where you're from, and then we'll let each of the band members do the same.
My name is Rick Lee. I play drums, and I'm from Coronado, California.
My name is Sister Judy, and I play the Zydeco rub board, and I live in Mount Helix.
All right.
I'm John. I'm on the accordion, and I live down in Imperial Beach.
I'm Jack Stevens. I play guitar, and I'm living in El Cajon, and I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
I'm Danny Perez, bassist for the Bayou Brothers out of Santee, California.
All right, right here in Santee, yeah, where our Mardi Gras is going to be. Now, can you start out, Rick, by telling us how you got this whole thing started? Are you from the South, from New Orleans, or what got you interested in this kind of music?
Well, all of us had toured through the South and picked up the flavor of Zydeco music in Louisiana. And John and I go way back to high school, John Chambers and I, and we founded the band back in, about 1996. And we just started the band as just a side project for fun. And we played Sister Judy's housewarming party. We started at a backyard party way back when. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe it, but that one gig turned to 2 to 4 to 8 to 100. We played thousands of shows.
I was at that party. Judy happens to be a neighbor of mine, and I had no idea that was where you got your start.
It's full circle now. Judy is our rub board player now. And so anyway, we're just having a great time, and the band's been very successful to this point.
Great. Can you tell us what Zydeco music is for listeners who may not know?
Zydeco music is kind of a mixture of Cajun and soul and a little bit of blues. It's picked up a little bit, and they have several dances that they do. Zydeco, the term actually is pick it up a notch or put a little more salt in the snap beans.
I like that. I know means. I heard Rick describe it earlier as Louisiana party music. So,
and it primarily a lot of accordion, which is traditional in Zydeco music. And
Yeah, for those that think of accordion as, you know, Lawrence Welk or something, this is really radically different.
Not in Zydeco. No,
it's very exciting music.
We don't do any polkas in Zydeco, no. Okay. And we also add the rub board.
Judy, play a little something on that rub board. Let people hear what that sounds like.
Sure. Here you go.
All right. Very nice. Now, I know that you're known for getting the audience involved, too. Tell us how that works, Judy.
Well, that's a little bit of my role as the rub board player, because rub board is an instrument that pretty much anybody can pick it up and make some noise with it, and it brings out a really fun side of people. Everybody gets a smile on their face when they put a rub board over their shoulder, so always bring an extra one or two and get the audience up.
And the audience, watch out, you might get to get up and play with the band.
We've had some big people play Rubboard with our band. We've had the mayor of San Diego. We've had the mayor of Gloucester, England,
when we
were touring in England.
Wow. Yeah, you've done a lot of traveling. Where are some of the other places that you've played, Rick?
We've done some fun gigs in Laughlin, Vegas, and the most fun was touring the UK twice. And the second time we brought this blues legend, Lazy Lester, with us, who wrote a lot of the blues hits. He's a blues Hall of Famer. We've been all over California, Nevada, Arizona. But we love playing here at home.
Speaking of here at home, we've got the two newest members of the band here, Danny and Jack from Santee and El Cajon. How did you guys get involved with all of this?
Well, I actually was... I was playing a job with a different band, and when we finished our show, I was loading my gear up, and John, an old friend of mine that I've known since about 1969, he approached me and said, "Hey, what's going on?" And I found out that their band, the Bayou Brothers, were following my group that I was with, and it happened that their guitar player was on tour in Europe doing a blues show. Blues thing. He does this every year. He's a very, very well-known blues guitar player in town. And John said, "Hey, you know, why don't you come fill in with us? You know, play some gigs with us because we need guitar players." So that's what I did. I went and played with them and did a few gigs. And next thing I know, I was officially a Bayou Brother.
Fantastic.
So it's worked out well.
Yeah. I was invited to a gig to come in and participate as a substitute for one of the gentlemen that were there before me, and immediately I realized the musicianship was top-notch, and the music was infectious. It was just like, wow, I love this. And in a little due time, due process, I came in to kind of be a full-time member as well, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, it certainly is toe-tapping, lively music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rick, you guys write some of your own original songs as well as performing traditional music and songs written by other people. Tell us a little bit about your style and how it's evolving.
Well, a lot of songwriters like us, you take real events. Like one of my favorite new songs is Don Don's Barbecue. And we used to play this casino in Yuma, the Paradise Casino. And one of the fellas that worked there in the kitchen, Don Don, had a rib joint out there in Yuma, and he would invite us to come over, and he just had the best ribs and potato salad. And so John here wrote a song, Don Don's Barbecue, about Don Don. He's a real person, and that's where a lot of the best material comes from, is a real life experience.
Very good. Now let's hear a little bit more about some of your music and some of the songs you might be playing at our Mardi Gras party. March 12th, and that's from 6 to 10 out at Pinnacle Peak in Santee. And the proceeds of that event, by the way, are all to benefit our reporting for East County Magazine for our show right here on KNSJ, which is nonprofit public radio. And you can get the ticket details at eastcountymagazine.org or by emailing editor@eastcountymagazine.org. They also will be on sale at Pinnacle Peak. So, Rick, can you tell us a little bit about some of the songs that we're going to be hearing?
We do some traditional Cajun and Zydeco. Jambalaya is one song that is one of my personal favorites. We have Gonna Party.
Gonna Party Till They Turn Out the Lights?
Yeah, Gonna Party Till They Turn Out the Lights. That's another favorite of mine. High Roller Zydeco is a really high-energy Zydeco tune. It's a really hip tune. It's one of my favorites. It's got great vocals, a really good hook, and a great beat.
Very cool. Then we've got one called Cupid's Shuffle.
Cupid's Shuffle has been something that has been successful, I think, at just about every show we play. Judy gets out there and gets the audience going, and there's a line dance that goes along with it, the Cupid Shuffle.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
It's got, again, that infectious groove. R&B kind of funkier with accordion on top and Jack strumming the funky guitar. It's just fun.
Nice. And how about Ramblin' Man?
Well, Ramblin' Man is it's an old cover by the Allman Brothers, which they're a southern rock band, but it's actually considered Zydeco also, and it's like a crossover, you would say. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great song that everybody can identify with. It just seems to always get the crowd. Every show we play, the crowd just loves it. And, of course, it lets me show off a little bit because it features a lot of guitar soloing on it. And so it's a lot of fun.
Another one, the name alone sounds pretty fiery, Hot Chili Mama.
Hot Chili Mama, yes. Well, that kind of sums it up right there. And I've even got the accordion on right here. I can play just one little lick. A hot chili mama, she like a hot chili pepper. Hot chili mama, yeah, I sure like to know you a whole lot better. Oh, yeah.
That is fantastic.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Now, I understand there's an interesting story behind one of your original songs that came about and was inspired by an incident that happened when you were playing at the San Diego Zoo. Rick, tell us what happened at the zoo.
We were playing the San Diego Zoo Wine Festival this last year. And as we're playing, one of the zookeepers came and said, "Have you guys looked behind you? There's something going on behind us." Well, it was a baby rhino that was actually dancing to our music.
Wow.
So we peeked behind the stage, and sure enough, there he was, just dancing away.
Doug the Zydeco.
To the Zydeco music. So John penned a song that we're currently going to put on our next CD called Zydeco Rhino.
Zydeco Rhino. Well, there you go. You heard about it. Your first
Zydeco Rhino. We've got kind of a jungle beat going on with the Zydeco music, so.
All right. And what's the album going to be called?
Zydeco Rhino.
I don't Zydeco Rhino. Okay.
It
awesome.
Wouldn't be great with the picture on it.
Yeah. So we're all looking forward to the big party and hearing everybody in action out there. Put on your dancing shoes, listeners, and if you want tickets, you can get them online at eastcountymagazine.org. Where can people find out more about the Bayou Brothers, Rick?
Well, we have a website, bayoubrothers.net, and we do have a fan club run by Sister Judy. And also, one fun aspect of our website, we have Sister Judy's Rubboard Club. If you get up and you play rubboard with us, we'll take your picture and we'll put it on the Rubboard Club.
Wow.
And you'll be a member of Sister Judy's Rubboard Club.
Well, there you go. We are looking forward to that. Let's have a big round of applause here for the Bayou Brothers.
All right. And a big four.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Monarch butterflies have filled the air and gardens in San Diego County for as long as anyone can remember. These colorful butterflies migrate over 2,000 miles to winter in Southern California and Baja, Mexico. The great mystery of how generations of monarchs find their way south over such vast distances may never be known. This year, the number of monarch butterflies reaching Mexico have reached an all-time low, down an alarming 90%, the World Wildlife Fund just announced. Unless action is taken to protect them, the monarch butterfly's spectacular annual migration through our region may soon be no more. How can this be? One factor stands out: loss of milkweed. And increasingly, environmentalists are blaming Monsanto's Roundup Ready seeds as the biggest culprit. Corn and wheat crops genetically modified with weed killers have decimated milkweed by 80% across the U.S. Midwest. All along the coast from Canada to Mexico, more and more farmers are planting genetically modified crops. These seeds grow plants that are resistant to certain weed killers, so the farmer can spray his crops with an herbicide and his plants will survive, but the weeds will die. That includes milkweed. The use of genetically modified crop seeds increases the farmer's yield. The use of Roundup Ready corn and soybean seed from Monsanto have decimated the milkweed. Deforestation and urban expansion are also likely contributing to the monarch's decline. 2 years of unusual springtime weather is another enormous factor. But one thing is certain: without milkweed, the monarch cannot survive. The monarch or milkweed butterfly can feed off other plants like California milkweed, swamp milkweed, butterfly weed, horseweed, spotted jopai weed, and Indian hemp, but its larvae lives only on milkweed. The monarch butterfly has decreased so dramatically in numbers that its winter habitat in Mexico shrunk from 45 acres in 1996 to just 1.7 acres in 2013. What is the solution? Butterfly advocates are hoping the industry will get behind campaigns to get people to plant more milkweed. Imagine that, deliberately growing weeds. However, the short, scrubby weeds with milky juice and stubby flowers offer the best hope to preserve everyone's favorite butterfly. And who can forget the magic as a child of watching a caterpillar weaving its cocoon and transforming to the magnificent monarch before your very eyes? In addition to the efforts of individuals, environmentalists are also clamoring for governments of North American nations to take action. In March, President Barack Obama is set to visit Toluca, Mexico, not far from the Monarch Preserve, to meet with Mexican and Canadian presidents. Omar Vidal, director of the World Wildlife Fund's Mexico office, wants North American leaders to agree on a plan to protect the monarchs, saying the migration symbolically unites our three countries. If you'd like to help save monarch butterflies in our region, you can find milkweed seeds at local nurseries or online. You can learn more at monarchwatch.org or at livemonarch.com. You can also volunteer each fall to join in the annual monarch butterfly count held on the West Coast each Thanksgiving of the Xerces Society. That's xerces.org. For more details, visit the Green Living section at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the drought situation. The San Diego County Water Authority has issued a drought watch, calling on the region's residents, businesses, and institutions to increase water conservation efforts. The board has formally activated the agency's Water Shortage and Drought Response Plan to preserve stored water reserves in Southern California and help keep more water available for other areas of the state that are more significantly affected by the drought. At the same time, the board also approved notifying the water agency's 24 member agencies that our region is at Level 1 Drought Watch. In coming weeks, the member agencies will consider what specific actions are necessary for each community. Typical voluntary conservation steps at Level 1 include repairing leaks quickly, washing paved surfaces only when necessary for health and safety, eliminating inefficient landscape irrigation such as runoff and overspray, irrigating only before 10 a.m. or after 6 p.m., using hoses with automatic shutoff valves for car washing, and irrigating areas that are not on automatic irrigation systems. Serving and refilling water at restaurants only on request. Offering hotel guests the option of not laundering their linens and towels daily. And using recycled or non-drinkable water for construction activities wherever possible. Governor Jerry Brown declared a statewide drought on January 17th as we enter our third year of very dry conditions. The County Water Authority does not anticipate water shortages for San Diego County this year because of local investments in water supply reliability projects and programs, a long-term decrease in regional water demand, and adequate water storage still in Southern California. Those investments include independent water transfers that will provide our county with approximately 180,000 acre-feet of Colorado River water for this year. Starting in early 2016, the Water Authority expects to start buying local drought-proof water supplies from the nation's largest seawater desalination plant that's now under construction in Carlsbad. The project is expected to deliver enough water for 112,000 households every year. Also, the Water Authority is executing a $3.1 billion capital improvement program to further improve regional water delivery and storage capacity. Major projects include raising the San Vicente Dam in Lakeside by 117 feet to provide additional storage and connect Lake Hodges to the region's imported water distribution system. But the current drought conditions reinforce the importance for all San Diego County residents and businesses to live a water-smart lifestyle by not wasting water and following water-efficient practices. You can get more tips on what you can do by going to www.watersmartsd.org. About 85% of the San Diego region's water supplies come from the Colorado River Basin and Northern California, while about 15% is generated locally. Efforts by residents, businesses, and farmers across the region to improve water use efficiency are helping to stretch available supplies. In fact, total regional use of drinkable water has actually fallen 24% in the last 5 years, enough to serve about 350,000 households annually. California and the rest of the Southwest have been very dry since 2012. Most of the major reservoirs on the State Water Project are well below their historical averages for this time of year. The state's snow survey in late January showed water content levels at just 12% of normal. The Colorado River Basin's two main reservoirs are still less than half full, despite a little more rainfall this season. Local conditions in San Diego County are also dry. Precipitation at Lindbergh Field was 43% of normal from October through January, so it's important for everyone to continue to conserve water.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with the Health Report. A student who attended Patrick Henry High School in San Carlos has died of a suspected meningitis infection, according to officials with the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency. The student was ninth grader Julian Pimentel. Meningitis is a bacterial infection known to cause serious illness in children and adolescents and can infect the blood and cause inflammation of the tissues covering the brain and the spinal cord. Julian's last day at school was February 11th. The time between exposure to the disease and the onset of symptoms is usually 3 to 4 days, with a range of 2 to 10 days. Persons who have been in close contact with the student have been notified by health officials that they should receive antibiotics to prevent infection from developing. Our sympathy goes out to the family of this student, said Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer. Parents should always be alert for any signs of infection in their children that could be caused by the meningococcal bacteria, she added. The disease is spread through close contact with the person who has the infection. Despite the death of this student, there is a low risk that anyone at the school was exposed, Wooten assured. This is the second case of possible meningococcal disease reported in the county in 2014, and the first death this year. Last year, there were 16 reported cases and 3 deaths. Symptoms may include fever, intense headache, lethargy, stiff neck, and a rash that does not blanch or change color under pressure. Anyone who develops these symptoms should immediately contact a healthcare provider or go to an emergency department for evaluation of possible meningococcal disease. A vaccine is available to prevent certain strains of meningitis. The vaccine is routinely recommended for adolescents 11 to 18 years old and individuals with certain medical conditions. For more information about this vaccine-preventable disease, please visit www.sdiz.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on meningitis in our region. Shortly after Ed Barena taped our report on the death of a Patrick Henry student, meningitis claimed the life of a second victim here in East County. Jackie Billings, a mother of 3, worked at a Santee Starbucks and had been fighting the flu for a couple of weeks before being admitted to Sharp Memorial Hospital. Just 12 hours later, the meningitis had spread to her spine and left her brain dead, though she remained on life support long enough to provide organ donations. Symptoms of meningitis again include fever, stiff neck, severe headache, lethargy, and a rash with pinpoint purple dots. Health officials remind you that it's critical to seek immediate emergency treatment if you suspect meningitis.
A new sheriff's station is now open on Campo Road in Rancho San Diego, near the intersection of Highways 54 and 94. The new station will serve the communities of Rancho San Diego, Spring Valley, La Presa, Jamul, Casa de Oro, Mount Helix, and the unincorporated portions of La Mesa and El Cajon. The Lemon Grove station will become a substation, but it will have a smaller staff contracted to serve the city of Lemon Grove, since the new substation will serve communities formerly under the Lemon Grove substation's jurisdiction. The new facility opens with 90 to 100 staff who are moving from the Lemon Grove substation. Sheriff Bill Gore says the department looked at more than 12 sites before choosing this location. It's long overdue, but when we're done here, it's going to be a really, truly state-of-the-art facility, he said during a prior groundbreaking ceremony. Supervisor Diane Jacobs said, to the community, it means faster response times to emergencies. I have to tell you, I'm thrilled. Jacob initiated the board action for the facility, which originally was proposed as a substation, though she quipped, there may be a few criminal wrongdoers that won't be quite so thrilled. The new site has a more convenient and strategic location, according to the sheriff's office. It will include 27,000 square feet for the substation on a 5-acre lot and will include patrol, operations, investigations, office space, and support facilities. The new substation is also green, featuring recycled building materials, natural lighting during the daytime, energy-efficient systems, low water use landscaping with drought-tolerant and indigenous plants, as well as bioswales for stormwater management. The total project budget, including land acquisition, planning, design, and construction, is $17.5 million. For East County Magazine, this is Arielle Johansson reporting.
A U.S. Border Patrol agent has shot and killed a man who reportedly threw a rock that struck the agent in the face. The shooting occurred early the morning of February 18th in the Otay Mountain Range. Agents were reportedly trying to detain a group of people believed to have crossed the border illegally. According to San Diego Sheriff Homicide Lieutenant Glenn Genitonio, the two agents were out of sight of each other when one of them was struck in the face by a thrown rock. Fearing for his safety, the agent fired, the lieutenant said, adding that the agent suffered minor injuries. Rocks are the weapons most often used in assaults locally against Border Patrol agents, and this is not the first time that such a conflict has proven deadly. That's stirred some controversy and criticism from immigrants' rights groups. The Police Executive Research Forum, an organization that conducted a review commissioned by the federal government, recently recommended that Customs and Border Protection prohibit deadly force against rock throwers. But Sean Moran with the National Border Patrol Council, representing agents, said the best way to prevent such shootings is for people to stop attacking Border Patrol agents. Current policy allows an agent to respond with lethal force if the agent believes his or her life is threatened. In 2012, agents were assaulted 185 times with rocks and responded with gunfire 22 times and non-lethal force 42 times. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio. More than 100 officers from law enforcement agencies and the Metropolitan Transit System patrolled known hotspots for drug-related crimes in Santee, Lakeside, El Cajon, and La Mesa, and the trolley line that connects each of these communities. 26 young adults were arrested during a day-long sweep focused on methamphetamine-related crimes in the East County. According to the County of San Diego Methamphetamine Strike Force, the recent arrests marked only the second time offenders aged 18 to 24 were the focus of a law enforcement operation. The sweep operation tipped the scale, focused on young offenders in an effort to intervene while early with offenders who often turn to crime to support their drug addiction. For us, that's a critical population, said probation officer Jason Druxman. Of the 26 arrests, 10 were taken into custody on suspicion of felonies and 16 for misdemeanors, authorities said, noting 2 people were taken directly to drug treatment facilities instead of jails. More and more counties are taking young offenders directly to inpatient treatment programs. This week's arrest came just one day after the county released the latest meth report card, which found that 2012 was the second worst for meth-related deaths in the San Diego area since record keeping started in 1995. The county said 217 meth-related deaths were recorded in 2012, second only to 2005's tally of 245 people. The county hotline for residents to report meth-related crimes or to seek information about treatment options is 877-NO-2-METH or 877-662-6384.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. The Boys and Girls Clubs of East County Foundation has recruited over 30 La Mesa community leaders who've begun raising $4.5 million, or about half of the nearly $9 million needed to build a new clubhouse in La Mesa, renovate a teen center in the city, and fund an endowment to operate both facilities. The new clubhouse will be called the Brady Family Clubhouse in recognition of a $3 million pledge from La Mesa residents Mary Alice and Ron Brady. It'll be located in Highland Park at the west end of the La Mesa Middle School campus. The existing teen center, located on the same school campus, will be renamed the Brady Family Teen Center. When completed, officials said both facilities will serve up to 400 children a day, ages 5 to 18. Dubbed the La Mesa Campaign Cabinet, the group of community leaders includes individuals from business, education, government, and politics. The honorary chair of the group is NBA Hall of Famer Bill Walton. The new Brady Family Clubhouse will have a gymnasium named after the honorary chair of the group, NBA Hall of Famer Bill Walton, a La Mesa native. The chairman of the capital campaign is Steve South, the president and CEO of Edco Disposal. He said, the project is a game changer for our community. It's all about saving lives in real time. Receiving a standing ovation at a breakfast recently were Ron and Mary Alice Brady, founders of the Brady Companies, a La Mesa-based contractor. Ron Brady said, we're doing this to impact young people because it's better to build kids than to try to mend adults. We're proud of the work of the Boys and Girls Clubs. They're teaching kids the importance of personal responsibility and accountability in their own lives. Also speaking at the breakfast was City Councilman Mark Rapostathis, who also works as an elementary school teacher and drama instructor at La Mesa Middle School, as well as director of the Peter Pan Junior Theater and Sea Hook Theater. He said, the new clubhouse will be a catalyst to help change the look of the entire western La Mesa area. When the doors open on the first day, the impact on our youth will be tremendous. At 25,000 square feet, the new Brady Family Clubhouse will be the largest of the six Boys and Girls Clubs of East County. Construction will begin in late 2015 or early 2016, with full operation set for the start of the 2016-17 school year. The clubhouse will feature a learning center called the Academy, a full-service kitchen, nutrition center, and Little Rascals area for 5 to 7-year-olds, plus a gymnasium. Plans also call for a facelift and upgrades for the existing teen center, which opened in 2006 and is a popular home away from home for La Mesa's teenagers.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Two of East County's biggest environmental organizations have joined the fight to oppose Soitec Solar's plans to build nearly 9,000 solar modules on meadows and wetlands in our region. The Anza Borrego Foundation and a law firm representing the Cleveland National Forest Foundation have submitted comments warning of dire consequences from Soitec Solar's proposed massive projects in the Boulevard community. Both urged the county that these projects would cause irreparable harm to wildlife and ecosystems not only in rural Boulevard, but also in the Anza Borrego Desert State Park and Cleveland National Forest. The Anza Borrego Foundation, or ABF, and the Anza Borrego State Park both own lands adjacent to Soitec's proposed projects. In its comment letter on the project's draft environmental impact report, the ABF urged the county to choose the no-project alternative for Soitec. The ABF comment letter warns that the project would negatively impact groundwater from the headwaters of the Carrizo Creek watershed, including creeks feeding into Carrizo Gorge and Carrizo Canyon. This would negatively impact wildlife, including endangered bighorn sheep, eagles, peregrine falcons, Kino checkerspot butterflies, and plant life, as well as impeding free movement of wildlife by reducing habitat connectivity and ruining wildlife corridors, the letter states. Soitec has contended that the region has plenty of water for its project, which could use 50 million gallons or more.
Local planners in Hukumba and Boulevard have cast serious doubts on that contention, noting that major operations such as rock crushing and cement making on site were omitted from the draft EIR's water use estimate. The ABF letter similarly notes that Soytec's project estimates for water use relied on the same consulting firm, Dudek, that grossly underestimated water use for SDG&E's ECO substation. That substation project used 90 million gallons of water, triple Dudek's estimate. The ABF concluded that Soytec estimates in the draft environmental impact report can be expected to be underestimated by at least the same factor, given the fast-track, broad-brushed analysis given to the proposal and the same company and crew doing the estimates. Going even further, however, the Anza Borrego Foundation letter also calls for a halt to all fast-tracking of energy projects on private and public lands. Fast-tracking is a euphemism for avoiding laws put in place to address environmental impacts, the environmental group concludes. As evidence of this irreversible damage caused by fast-tracking, the ABF's executive director said the state park has already been negatively impacted by Pattern Energy's Ocotillo Express wind facility on 12,500 acres of Federal Bureau of Land Management public land adjacent to the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Ocotillo Wind has had a profound negative impact upon the park's natural and cultural resources, has created a barrier to wildlife, has encroached upon a documented desert bighorn sheep lambing area, and has forever blighted the scenic qualities of the entire southern sector of the state park, according to the Anza Borrego Foundation. Now, a law firm representing the Cleveland National Forest Foundation has also sent a letter to Robert Hintgen at the county's Planning and Development Services offices. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation, which promotes sustainable land use planning, concludes that the Soytec draft EIR fails to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, because it does not analyze alternatives, such as producing the same amount of power using rooftop solar instead. The law firm asks the county to delay further consideration of the project until a legally adequate EIR is prepared that fully complies with CEQA. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation said the project EIR also ignores the growth-inducing impacts and fails to even support its conclusion that the project will have a positive impact on curbing climate change. Let's be frank, the foundation's attorney wrote, unless the county commits to replace a commensurate amount of dirty energy, this project will simply enable sprawl development. The foundation's lawyer blasts the project for proposing massive solar modules on relatively pristine backcountry habitat, adding that it would also use massive amounts of water, threatening groundwater supplies that wildlife and residents rely on. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation wants the county to consider alternatives that are safer for our environment, such as rooftop solar, and to evaluate a distributed generation alternative. Distributed generation can accomplish the same goals as utility-scale solar projects, the development of large quantities of renewable energy, but with substantially reduced environmental impacts, as it does not require developing undeveloped land, the foundation stated. The EIR also fails to say who will purchase the power from the project and at what cost to ratepayers, the foundation's letter points out. Now, residents in Rural Boulevard and neighboring Hukumba have launched an online petition asking San Diego supervisors to save their wildlife, water supplies, wild and scenic places, and to put solar in urban environments instead of in our backcountry, just as these two major environmental groups are also asking. You can read or sign the residents' petition at our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program includes art, art classes, hikes, music, and theater. San Diego County Acoustic Showcase Series is presenting the Swept Wing Chicken Thieves from the San Diego Bluegrass Society, performing at the Lemon Grove Library on Tuesday, February 18th, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. The Swept Wing Chicken Thieves are a quintet of musicians featured in San Diego Bluegrass Society events. Admission is free. Every Friday and Saturday night, expect live entertainment at Winola Pizza and Bistro in the Winola area of Julian, 3 miles west of Julian on State Highway 78, and 3.5 miles east of Santa Isabel. This Friday night, February 21st, features a performance by bluegrass band Jimbo Trout from 6 to 9 p.m. Also in Julian, the Julian Doves and Desperados are in town every Sunday in Julian, weather permitting, from 12 to 4 p.m. They perform historic comedy and gunfight skits at their stage area, located between the Julian Fitness Center and the Julian Market in Delhi, at 1 p.m., 2 p.m., and 3 p.m. Admission is free. An Art in the Park exhibit runs throughout the month of February at Mission Trails Regional Park in San Carlos. Mark Catane will be exhibiting his photography, and award-winning oil painter Vanessa Rusick will be exhibiting her oil paintings at the Visitor's Center Art Gallery at 1 Father Junipero Serra Trail in San Carlos. Another art exhibit in East County, An American Family, The Art of Kathleen Strzelecki, will be held over throughout the month of February in the Lemon Grove Library on School Lane in Lemon Grove. Emotional Power, Psychological Intensity, and Elegiac Portraits of Children are features of Strzelecki's dramatic series of large-scale works that speak directly to the viewer. The Lake Murray Walk and Talk Group of La Mesa will meet Tuesday, February 18th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. at Lake Murray. Led by Mission Trails Regional Park Trail Guide Nancy Clement, this is an informative talk and guided nature walk that meets by the boat docks and is held on the third Tuesday of each month unless it is raining. As reported last week in Destination East County, Mission Trails Regional Park is offering a workshop for kids 3 years old and up called Bothersome But Beneficial, Backyard Bandits. This week, the program will be presented on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, February 17th through 19th, from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., with puppets, pelts, songs, and specimens, scat, tracks, and a craft and nature walk. Kids can learn about nature's nocturnal nuisances, raccoons, skunks, and opossums. Also at Mission Trails Regional Park, Nora's Art Class for Children will be held from 2 to 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, February 22nd. Nora's Art Classes for Children ages 5 through 12 are being offered by artist Nora Kearney Johnson on most Saturday afternoons through June 2014. Each Saturday is a different topic, and children may take home their art projects. All art supplies are included in the cost. The dates for the classes and weekly topics are listed on the mtrp.org website. There must be a minimum of 5 students registered 48 hours in advance for the class to be scheduled. For class confirmation, go to the homepage, mtrp.org, and click on Nora's Children's Art Classes under More News. The class on February 22nd will be Jacob Lawrence's World Paper Collage. This Saturday, February 22nd, from 9 to 11:30 a.m., there will be a hike with a ranger to see native plants in bloom. This is a free family hike to the Par 4 Drive in El Cajon. San Diego is home to one of the most biologically diverse hotspots of the world, and the San Diego Wildlife Refuge is no exception. The topic of native plants and wildflowers in bloom with Ranger Debbie Good. And then on March 22nd from 8 to 11 a.m., the hike will be to McGinty Mountain Trail in Jamul with the topic Special Soils, Rare Plants, and Historical Mines. Come and learn about San Diego's native habitats such as coastal sage scrub, riparian, cactus scrub, and native grassland. Find out how the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is working to protect the sensitive and unique wildlife that lives there. Many times, specialists or experts are featured on the hikes, covering special themes such as International Migratory Bird Day or National Pollinator Week. Kids and families are encouraged to participate. Hike with the Ranger is on one Saturday per month, usually lasts between 2 and 3 hours, and there is no shade during the hike. Hikers need to bring water, wear sturdy hiking shoes, and can bring binoculars and a sketchbook also. The play Annie is being performed again this weekend, put on by the Christian Youth Theater. Leapin' Lizards, Little Orphan Annie, the comic strip character that will live forever in the young at heart, hits the stage on Friday, February 21st at 7 p.m., and on Saturday, February 22nd at 2 p.m., and again at 7 p.m., and Sunday, February 23rd at 2 p.m. The cast and crew of this musical, toe-tapping timeless family classic about the little orphan who is never short of optimism and tenacity, features students from all across San Diego, ages 8 through 18. The performances will be held at the Greenfield Middle School on Greenfield Drive in El Cajon. There will be a 5K, 10K benefit in Ramona called Band on the Run on Saturday, February 22nd at 7 a.m. at the Ramona High School track. Check-in is at 7 a.m. and the races start at 8 a.m. The races include a one-mile kids run and supervised kids area while the adults race, as well as a free T-shirt. Proceeds will benefit Ramona High School band programs. That's all for this week. All of these events are on our calendar and in our festivals and events section on www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and by a community enhancement grant from the County of San Diego. See you around, East County!
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with a Capitol Report on East County Magazine. A battle is brewing in Congress over unemployment benefits for veterans. Long-term unemployment for 21,000 veterans and many other Americans expired on December, and Congress failed to extend these benefits. Each month, another 3,000 veterans who served our country join the ranks of the unemployed. Many of those are right here in San Diego County. A recent effort by the Senate to extend unemployment benefits for America's veterans was killed by a Tea Party-led filibuster in the Senate that blocked the measure from coming up for a vote. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has committed to keep bringing this issue to a vote until it passes. But to do so, he'll need a few more votes to overcome future filibusters. Next time it happens, we're going to be there with hundreds of personal stories from veterans who lost their benefits and 30,000 supporters who stand ready to take action on their behalf, says John Stoltz, an Iraq War veteran and chairman of VoteVets.org. VoteVets has launched a petition calling on Congress to extend unemployment benefits. So far, over 25,000 veterans, military family members, and supporters have signed it. You can find the petition at their website at www.votevets.org or at our site, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, we have a report on efforts by two California legislators seeking to curtail the National Security Agency, or NSA, from warrantless surveillance of Americans. Senate Bill 828 is co-authored by Republican State Senator Joel Anderson, who represents most of East County, and Democratic Senator Ted Lieu from Torrance. Anderson says, "I support this bill because I support the Constitution, our Fourth Amendment rights, and our freedoms to live in the United States of America." The bill would prohibit state agencies and officials, as well as corporations that provide services to the state, from helping the NSA in collecting data without warrants on 38 million Californians. Services that the NSA relies upon include power and water needed to cool its powerful supercomputers. Firms such as internet service providers or telecommunications companies could potentially lose lucrative state contacts if they assist the NSA with data collection on their customers. The measure could even be used to cut off power to any NSA data collection centers in places with municipally owned utilities. This bill would also ban use of electronic data or metadata provided by the federal government or a corporation that was obtained without a federal warrant, in many cases, from being used in a state or local criminal investigation or prosecution. SB 828 is based on model legislation called the Fourth Amendment Protection Act. It's proposed by the Tenth Amendment Center under a project called Nullify the NSA. It seeks to restore constitutional protections against unreasonable search and seizure guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. A federal judge recently ruled that the NSA's widespread collection of Americans' phone records is unconstitutional, calling the sweep near Orwellian. All 317 million Americans cannot reasonably be considered to be suspicious simply for making or receiving telephone calls, Senator Lieu said. The NSA's blanket seizure of telephone records of all Americans is therefore an unreasonable seizure under the Fourth Amendment, he added, noting that our founding fathers enacted the Bill of Rights because they understood the dangers of an out-of-control government having fled tyranny of English rule. The measure is based on the concept of state nullification. The Tenth Amendment Center explains that the concept began when Thomas Jefferson was vice president and authored what came to be known as the Kentucky Resolutions of 1798.
The resolutions made the case that the federal government is created by the states and that states have the authority to judge the constitutionality of the federal government's laws and decrees. Jefferson also argued that states should refuse to enforce laws that they deem unconstitutional. James Madison wrote a similar resolution for Virginia, and he asserted that whenever the federal government exceeds its constitutional limits and begins to oppress citizens of a state, that state's legislature is duty-bound to interpose its power and prevent the federal government from victimizing people. In California, Lew previously carried a resolution asking Congress to stop the NSA's unconstitutional practices. That measure passed almost unanimously, 32-1, and that could bode well for SB 828's chances of winning passage in Sacramento. The bill is also drawing cautious praise from civil liberties groups, including the American Civil Liberties Union. On the other hand, high-tech firms or other companies fearing loss of business could oppose the measure, and Governor Jerry Brown has vetoed some recent consumer privacy measures if law enforcement voiced opposition. Ultimately, if the bill passed, it could face legal challenges that could wind up being decided someday by the U.S. Supreme Court, which thus far has not been inclined to rule favorably on other efforts by states to nullify federal actions.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing local author, editor, and teacher Mark A. Clements. My guest has had 4 novels published and has edited dozens of others. His book, The Land of Nod, won Best Horror or Mystery and the first Theodore Geisel Award at the San Diego Book Awards, where he will be this year's Master of Ceremonies. Mark also teaches at San Diego Writers, Inc., the Southern California Writers Conference, and the La Jolla Writers Conference. He is especially known for his late-night read and critique workshops and his pep talks on perseverance and passion. Welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Your first book, 602, A Ghost Story, was written on a typewriter and traditionally published in 1989. And now all your books are available as ebooks. How have these changes in the publishing industry affected you as a novelist and teacher?
The truth is they don't affect me at all. An awful lot of people who are beginning writers or even fairly experienced writers who have not been published start to put things backwards. They start to be concerned about, do I go with a conventional publisher? Do I publish this as an ebook? Before they've actually finished the job. To me, the writing of the book itself comes first. You write the book for yourself and for the people around you to make it as perfect as you can. Then you worry about how and where to publish it.
You also teach a class called Poetry for Novelists. With so many industry challenges, how do you keep those literary fires burning?
First of all, I read poetry, which is a fairly recent interest of mine. Also lots of nonfiction and essays, articles, as well as novels and short stories. The idea being to learn everything that you can, which is a never-ending process. Try to find the things that appeal to you and pull from them the things that will inspire your own writing and help you in your own writing. And then worry later about what you're going to do with that work when it's done.
Your books have been categorized as horror, yet you also focus a great deal on character development. Do you still define your work as part of the horror genre? And if so, what does that mean to you?
The genre thing is kind of a pain. Stephen King actually referred to the horror genre as a ghetto at the time when it... Now a lot of bookstores no longer have that genre separated out in a ghetto. They kind of come and go depending on the tastes of the public, of the reading public. But I don't. That's something else I don't concern myself with personally. I write what I want to write. My books were all marketed as horror and had covers that indicated that. But they crossed genres, and they had a wide variety of things. One of them was sort of a detective story in a fashion. 602, as you said, was a ghost story. Another would qualify more as a thriller. It always varies, and those are marketing decisions that publishers used to make. Of course, now a lot of authors have to make that kind of choice themselves if they go the self-publishing route. But my good example of how this can be damaging is Michael Crichton, His first book that he published under his own name was called The Andromeda Strain. And by any categorization, it was hard science fiction. But they didn't publish it that way. They didn't market it that way. When it was on the shelves, it was just put in fiction. And we all know what happened with Michael Crichton's career. If he'd been stuck in the science fiction ghetto, the odds of that happening would have been greatly reduced. He would have been considered a science fiction writer. And all of those people out there who say, well, I don't read science fiction, just as there are people who say, I don't read horror, I don't read romance, whatever, would never have picked it up, and history would not have been what it has become in the book world as a result.
Right, and we all love Crichton. What is your next book about, and do you know when it will be available?
It's hard to say when it'll be available. I've been working on it forever. It is a kind of a rumination on evolution in all of its aspects, evolution of individual people, their personalities, their behaviors, evolution of life on Earth and ways that it might have been different under different circumstances. What if the circumstances were to change and the whole process of evolution of life on Earth were to change? How would the life that's already here deal with it? So again, horror, science fiction, mainstream fiction, what is it? I don't know. All I know is that I'm trying to make it the finest book that I possibly can.
Well, we look forward to reading it. Mark, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Mark A. Clements and his work, please visit his website at www.markaclements.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.